Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the Star Coalition. So glad to have you here with us as we talk with some of the greatest minds in advocacy, research, and the treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. We are very honored today and excited to have with us Jill Harkavy-Friedman. She is the Vice President of Research for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I have had the wonderful pleasure to get to know Jill over the last few years and see the incredible work that AFSP is doing, both nationally and even locally, all throughout the U.S. Very proud of the work that is being done. And since Jill, you know, AFSP has a very strong wing of research. And so can you give us a little bit of maybe what the focus is that you do and the focus of research within the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention? I'm sure that a lot of people may not be aware of all the work that you guys do within research.
Sure. And thank you so much for having me today and giving me the opportunity to share this information. So actually, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention was started by some survivors of suicide loss, people who had lost their family members, and several researchers, because the problem of suicide was not well understood. And so the effort was to try and understand it such that we can develop interventions to prevent suicide. But the understanding of suicide is complex because suicide is complex. And so suicide involves biology, psychology, social functioning, and environment. So they set out to fund suicide prevention research with $11,000 in 1987. And I myself got my first grant from AFSP and around 92, 93 to study suicidal behavior in people with schizophrenia. And so now this year, in 2019, we funded $6.3 million worth of new research, 26 new studies. So our research spans all areas, including community efforts and, again, biological, psychological, neurological, genetic, anything you can imagine that could help us to understand and prevent suicide. And we fund things internationally. So we also funded really most of the researchers in suicide prevention at least once in their career. And we just had this huge research summit, the International Summit for Suicide Research, where over 450 researchers gathered to share their findings and their data and make new collaborations. So we're very dedicated to that. And then we use the findings of the research to develop programs and to advocate for legislation that will help people who are either affected by suicide or experiencing suicidal ideation and behavior themselves or mental health difficulties. So we're really a grassroots organization. We have volunteers in all 50 states, and we actually have state days in all 50 states. We go to Washington one day a year and visit all 535 offices. And what we're sharing are the findings from the research that help us to figure out how to prevent suicide.
You know, it's interesting because suicide is an extremely emotional topic, right? And so we can share stories about suicide, but the data, it's such a strong perspective when you're trying to find the root cause, or how can we create legislation, or how can we maybe mold a conversation around suicide that is based on actual data. That's a different approach, maybe, right? I mean, it's taking it from a place of emotion into data and into helping shape policy. Is there anything specific, maybe just from either just the last few years or since you started, any specific data that you've worked on that you thought, wow, this really stands out as something that I think can help, it really changes the conversation around suicide?
Yeah, so one very important piece is that asking someone about suicide is not going to make them suicidal. And in fact, it could be helpful. And so we have a whole campaign about how to reach out to someone that you're worried about, or how to reach out to someone because you're worried about yourself. Changing that conversation is huge because people used to think there was nothing you could do and they were ashamed if they felt suicidal. Now we know that it's a mental health, it's part of your brain health. Mental health conditions contribute but it's not the whole story. So it's actually the findings from research have changed that story. It's no longer a secret. And we also have now guidance about how to talk about suicide, especially if there's been a suicide, so that we don't create, so that you don't create contagion and more suicides. And so we're working with the media on that. So those are two very direct ways.
And that's been a part of the conversation, I think, that we've had together in some of the work groups that we've worked out, worked through with the STAR in some of the programming that we've done, is that language, how important it is that we be open and direct with the communication that we're having with individuals. So, and that was an eye-opening for me as well. I think that people do have an assumption that if you directly talk about suicide, then that's going to increase the likelihood that someone may do it. But you're finding, obviously, the direct opposite. Some of the work that we are doing within clinical research and suicide is something that you've kind of taken the mantle on. Is a lot of times individuals that may want to participate in a clinical research study around brain disorders or mental health may be excluded from participating in those clinical research trials due to having maybe suicidal ideology or maybe a suicide attempt within the last 12 months. But we're finding that individuals that do have suicidal ideation are no more likely to maybe complete suicide during a clinical research trial than someone who has not had or does not at least self-disclose of having suicidal ideation. What's some of the data that you're finding within that, and why is it important that we allow individuals that that may have suicidal ideation to participate in clinical research in ways that could ultimately improve their lives or others?
Well, you know, Luke, the truth is that about a third of people who have a mental health condition that could be treated have thought about suicide or maybe even made a suicide attempt. So the first problem is if you're excluding those people, you're not really learning about how treatments work. So that's the first thing. The other thing is we've learned that if you're treating someone who's suicidal, part of that treatment is to help them manage their suicidal ideation, so that it doesn't turn into behavior. So there are definitely ways to include someone who's thinking about suicide in a clinical trial, and they hopefully will benefit from participating. But the other part that you and I have been working on is the fact that when someone is excluded for suicidal behavior, that can be very powerful and hurtful and can lead someone to feel that they don't have any other options. So if you must exclude someone, which we discourage, we have many ways to help include people who are suicidal, then that has to be done in a very compassionate and respectful way as well.
So we've seen over the years, unfortunately, in some areas, an increase of suicide, whether it be with older Americans. I even know within our state, suicide has recently become the number one cause of violent death for individuals living in our state. I know that there are some pretty ambitious goals that AFSP has for the future of reduction of the number of suicides. Can you talk a little bit about that? What are some of the goals that AFSP has set forth and are really challenging us, those of us in society, to be aware and to be, I guess, more diligent about conversations around suicide? What are some things you guys are currently looking at for the future?
So we have actually in 2015, we established something called Project 2025. And our goal was to reduce the rate of suicide 20% by 2025. So that's an effort that takes the whole country. The truth is, we have never had a national effort to reduce suicide. So it's no wonder that the numbers keep going up. But also the conversation has improved so that there may even be more suicides recorded because people realize it's from a health condition, nothing to be stigmatized. So in order to reduce that rate, we took a very methodical approach. And at first we thought, well, we'll look at high-risk populations. You know, we'll look at the elderly, we'll look at veterans, we'll look at people with depression or substance use. And we realized we'll look at middle-aged men, that where are we going to find these people? So we ended up with a whole advisory focusing on four areas where we can reach the most people. And the first is large healthcare systems, particularly but not exclusively primary care and behavioral health care. Because when an organization is geared towards identifying and helping people who are suicidal, it can actually reduce the rate. Research has shown that in these large healthcare systems that take on the problem of suicide, they reduce the rate of suicide. So that's one area. The second area, and by the way, 83% of people see their primary care doc each year. So it's an access point. Mm-hmm. We also focus on emergency departments because 39% of people who die by suicide were seen in an emergency department within the few months before their suicide. Mm. So if we can help emergency departments identify people that were at risk and intervene, not everybody who's thinking about suicide has to be hospitalized. You know, that's an old myth when we didn't have anything, we didn't know anything. But now we have a lot of tools and we know a lot. And we're working with the American College of Emergency Physicians and have developed a tool called the iCare tool that helps emergency physicians identify people at risk and gives them a plan of action so that many of those people can actually go home. The third area is the firearm owning community, because mm-hmm. over 50% of suicides are by firearms. In fact, 2/3 of suicide death of firearm deaths are suicide. So in that respect, if we can help educate firearm owners to know that if you can separate a person from their firearm during a suicidal crisis, they will not choose another method and you could potentially save their life. So we're teaching people about suicide at gun ranges and gun shops, and we're teaching the gun shop and gun range owners about this as well. And then the final area is in corrections, because suicide is the leading cause of death in jails, and it's high up there in prisons as well. Hmm. And so we're working with the National Commission on Corrections Healthcare, and we just put out a guidance with them on suicide prevention. We think if we can reach all those groups and we can get the communities behind us, and our chapters are what we have chapters in all 50 states, and our chapter volunteers working on it, that we could do this. We could reduce the rate 20% by 2025.
You know, you mentioned the emergency departments that you're working with. There still is, like you said, maybe a stigma that people are afraid to admit the fact that they may be having thoughts of suicide, because they may believe, well, they're going to lock me up, or there could be something even worse. Where have you seen maybe the shift of stigma and the way that people are talking about suicide and viewing suicide since you really started back in the early 90s?
Well, you know, things have really shifted a lot, because now we've done Harris polls to find out where is the community in terms of understanding suicide. And now over 90% of people understand that suicide can be prevented. It's not that we're at the point of preventing every suicide, but we can prevent some. And people understand that. They also realize, like I like to say, we all have mental health. It's not something that only suicidal or people with mental health conditions have. So we all have mental health. We have to take care of it. And sometimes we don't feel well. Sometimes we actually have a condition we have to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so as we all are paying attention to our mental health, which is, you know, an important but not the only contributor to suicide, that opens up the conversation. So when you say, how are you doing today? That now includes mental health. Mm. That takes away some of the stigma. The other is helping people to have knowledge, to understand that we have interventions now. We have things that we can do to help people that we didn't have just 10, 15 years ago. And that all came out of the research, much of which was stimulated by the research program at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So we're in a completely different place. In the first study of the brain and suicide wasn't until 1974.
Wow.
Before that, the brain was only discussed as how it was injured when somebody tried to kill themselves. Now we know that the thinking of a suicidal person is different, that they don't have access to their usual capacity for coping. And so that's why giving them tools to manage it, limiting their access to lethal means, can make such a difference. So we're having those conversations. We have a great campaign called Seize the Awkward, And it's actually with the Ad Council and the Jed Foundation. And it's just at seizetheawkward.org with lots of tools for that 16 to 22-year-old group to talk about, to reach out. Like, how do you reach out to somebody? Well, we have videos that, you know, give examples because it's scary. But it's so worth it. And just a little, how are you doing? I'm here for you. It turns out can save somebody's life.
And that's what we would want for ourselves. If we were in that place, we would want someone to come to us and say, hey, are you okay? You know, are you thinking about killing yourself? Is there something that's going on that I can be there for you? And we would want that. So we should feel empowered to be able to step up to others and say that when we feel that there may be a moment that they need that support. And you guys are just... At AFSP, you guys are doing incredible work. So I want to encourage everyone listening, if you or a loved one may be dealing with thoughts of suicide, they have their lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-TALK or 273-8255, or you can actually text the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 741-741. You can also go to their website at www.afsp.org. There you can find ways that you can help support others. You can find out about things happen. You can actually locate support groups in your area, learn about suicide, the work that they're doing. They've got incredible advocacy and public policy, all the research information on there. How do you support individuals who maybe have lost a loved one to suicide? There's just an incredible amount of information and resources there. And Jill, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing to bring hard facts to us about suicide, and so we can see this from a different perspective, and one that we think that can change the conversation as well.
Well, thank you so much for bringing it to the forefront. And one way that we raise awareness is through our walks. Mm-hmm. And so there's probably a walk near you. This fall, 327,000 people put a face on suicide to say, I support it. I've experienced it, but I'm not alone and you're not alone. And so I encourage you to check out on afsp.org. And I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you, Luke, and share what we've been learning through the years.
Well, thank you, Jill. And yes, do go look, because you can find where they have walks. They've got community walks, campus walks. They do overnight walks. And really, there is a community there to support you. And AFSP is a great focal point. And again, thank you, Jill, for all the work that you guys are doing. And I look forward to seeing you soon. We've got some conferences coming up. So
likewise.
Yes. So if, again, check out afsp.org. Thanks again for joining us today on the STAR Coalition podcast, where we do like to get together with thought leaders and brain health and other areas to discuss topics that really affect all of us. So continue to follow the STAR Coalition on social media and our website at www.thestar.org, T-H-E-S-T-A-R-R.org. And until then, thanks.